that maybe today, in a room like we were in today, might be the day when those students would make that pivot and say, I'm going to do something bigger than myself, and this generation will be remembered forever for the way we redefined generosity to great causes.
Welcome to Think About It, a podcast from Houston Baptist University here in Houston, Texas. At HBU, we empower our students so their beliefs can fuel their lives. From our competitive nursing program to our world-renowned theologians, we prepare our students to thrive at the university level and beyond. And now we join our host, Dr. Jerry Johnston, with today's guest.
HBU welcomed Tim Smith. He is the author of the upcoming book, From a Thousand to a Billion, the author of Donors Are People Too, and has that unique challenge to raise $1 billion for the Museum of the Bible, opening in November 2017. He spoke to our students about generosity. Tim, welcome to Houston.
Well, thank you, Dr. Johnston. It's great to be here, and it was a great day here on campus.
You have had 40 years of raising money, and not only money, but all the resources of people creativity to nonprofits. How in the world did you get into that field?
Well, I started young. I was 19 years old and working for a nonprofit organization, early stages of post-high school, and trying to figure out a way how to make some money and go to college. And one day our boss came in and kicked us all out of the office and said, go raise $1,000 and don't come back until you do. And I just got back faster than the rest of them. And they moved me on over to the fundraising, and I've been going strong ever since.
HBU has been dependent upon donors, just like every other Christian university and charity. You have the book, Donors Are People Too, Managing Relationships with Ministry's Major Contributors. Can you just give us some highlights, why you wrote the book and what's in it?
Yeah, I was really encouraged to write the book years ago. I was training organizations on how to engage major donors. And actually, even before that, it was just a system that I used day to day in my work as a fundraiser. And a guy, my mentor, a guy that had really poured a lot into my life, he said, Tim, a lot of people are talking about systems around a relational model of fundraising, but you're the only guy I know that's actually doing it. Now, this was years ago. There are a lot of people doing it today. He says, we ought to write a book. And I looked at him like, you know, he was crazy. You know, what? Write a book? Who would read a book about this? And he said, no, I'm going to help you, and we're going to write this book. And so we did. And I was hesitant of printing very many copies of it. I just thought, you know, this was my ideology of how I've done my work for many years. And gosh, in the first few years, we printed that book 5 times as it just became kind of the staple training tool in a lot of nonprofits all over the world of how to really touch major donors, but engage them from a basis of relationship, not from a basis of marketing. And in the book, I really talk about, as a core, when ministry and marketing are integrated together, it's a beautiful thing in an organization. But so often, those two groups are competing against each other. As there's the marketing people, and they're doing programs and doing the work of the organization, and then there's the fundraising, side. Or excuse me, I said that backwards. There's the marketing side that are doing the fundraising, and then there's the ministry side that are doing the programming. And my whole thinking was, we're stronger together. Two are better than one. I think that's in the Bible, right?
Yeah,
I think so. And so how do we come together, and how do your marketers learn the value of ministry and how to bring that into their work with donors? And then how do the ministers who do program understand the uniqueness and value of bringing marketing into their day-to-day DNA? And when we figured that out, we watched our organization begin to explode. And then out of that, I wrote a book. And from there, I just started taking that out, that principles, the the DNA of that model, which is basically that people are important to God and they should be important to us. So let's take care of them in our organizations. Don't treat them like fundraising targets, but treat them like people that are in need of authentic relationship, that are in need of a place to land, to do good work, to do things bigger than themselves, to make a difference in the world, and help them feel the value of that day to day, and then let their resources follow that passion.
1,000 to 1,000,000,000 is an upcoming book. That's a unique title, and it perhaps contextualizes the position you're in right now. Museum of the Bible, Washington, D.C. Take us back to when you went to Oklahoma City and there was just the ideal for this billion-dollar museum in Washington, D.C., and what you heard and what you've done.
Well, yeah, actually, it was in Washington, D.C. I was actually serving as the chief development officer of a great charity called Food for the Hungry, and in my mid-50s, thought I'd spend the rest of my life there and then just settle in somewhere. And here I was, got a call from a dear friend of mine and said, hey, these guys building the Museum of the Bible are in need of a development officer. Would you come talk to them? I said, yeah, I'd love to talk to them, but I'm not looking for a job. He says, they know that, but they could use your expertise because they're having a hard time finding someone. And so I flew to Washington and spent a few hours and walking around what is today the building that we are creating the museum in. And I caught the vision for that project. And a couple months later, I left my role at Food for the Hungry and joined this very small team at that time at Museum of the Bible and launched into this project to build this museum. And so 1,000 to 1,000,000,000 is a book that I'm writing about how to lead, guide, develop, build a nonprofit organization. And, you know, kind of with a backdrop to that, to my career, where my first campaign was $1,000 and my last one now will be $1 billion. And what works? What are the consistent activities between those two metric positions? There's a lot of difference there, except other than just the number of zeros, right?
Yeah.
So we, you know, and I think the journey I've been on these last few years with Museum of the Bible has really made me reinforce this value of personal relationship, of engaging donors into the heart and the soul of your organization, letting them find their place where they can really, create not only change for the organization, but change in their own lives so that it becomes something that really impacts them for a lifetime. And we've been trying to carry that same model forward here.
So you covered a lot of ground quickly. When you responded to, who was it, Steve Green at Hobby Lobby?
Yeah, Steve Green and Carrie Summers. Carrie's the president of Museum of the Bible. Steve Green is the chairman of our board at Museum of the Bible. So I flew up to Washington and had lunch with them and sat with them for a couple of hours, yeah.
No building, no nothing tangible.
No, actually, the building in those at that time, it was the Washington Design Center.
And let's give its proximity to where it is in D.C.
Yeah. 3 blocks from the Capitol and about 2 blocks from the mall. So if you're familiar with Washington, D.C., we're in the Southwest Corridor there. And if you just create a triangle drawn from our building to the Capitol and then to the mall, we're right there. We're 2 blocks behind the Air and Space Museum. So we're right in the hub of the museums.
And so you accepted that, and that is a story in and of itself. But when you finally confirmed that you would come, you had what, one staff member?
Well, yeah, I had one person, but I only had half of her schedule. So I really had a half person. And I remember sitting in the room with her and a few of our executives, and we talked about raising $1 billion over the next 5 years. And the executives all stepped out, and I looked at this young lady, and I said, oh, my gosh, what are we going to do? And she kind of terrified looked at me and says, wait a minute, we hired you to figure that out.
Yeah.
And so it's from that really humble beginning, we just started and built a very aggressive program. In those days, we had half an employee. We had a really great lead donor and no database, no other donors to speak of. And just one by one, we've been able to build that program today, over 40,000 active donors just a little over 2 years later. And I send emails and communications out to about 400,000 people a month now that are following us at Museum of the Bible.
And I get your communications. They come with great frequency, but they come with substance. Hey, what is the missing element in ministries that they've got this vision, they've got a lot of decibel, a lot of volume to them, but they're not getting the resources they need? I mean, you and I both know there are many clerics and pastors and parachurch leaders extremely discouraged in the journey because they don't sense enough of the financial resource to accomplish it. Is there hope for them?
Yeah, I think so. I think you got to back up to some very basic things like what's your product? What are you really offering as an organization? I think that a lot of charities start with a great idea, but they've not been able to synthesize that down to a significant thing that they do. Like at Museum of the Bible, we exist to invite people to engage with the Bible. It's very simple. It's very straightforward. We want people to engage this book, and that's our product. We're not trying to sell Bibles. We're not trying to promote a particular Bible. We are not trying to proselytize people away from their theological belief. We want people to engage the book. So you need to have a product. And then the second thing is it worth funding? Is it something that a donor is going to look at and with the sea of opportunities that are out there for us to give our money to? I think the last numbers I saw were 1.8 million nonprofit organizations just in the U.S.
And 2,000 in Houston alone.
Yeah, yeah. So you look at that, you know, is it worth, does it have donor value? And then the third is, how does your work make the world a better place? At the end of the day, we want to feel like we're making a difference. So if I have a great idea, a good product, if I can find people to fund it, what difference does it make? Are we really going to change the world that we live in? And I think when you can break it down to those simple buckets, simple pieces, then from there, it's a science, but it's not rocket science. You know, it's a science that the average person can manage and figure out. On how do we, day by day, person by person, bring people alongside of that great idea?
We're talking to Timothy L. Smith, who's the author of Donors Are People Too, in the upcoming book, From 1,000 to 1,000,000,000, Chief Development Officer at Museum of the Bible, 4 decades experience of helping men and women understand the principle that you addressed today. I thought it was interesting. You addressed generosity at HBU to the students, but you were presenting a contrast between the generation when you were in your 20s or maybe late teens and what we call the millennials today. Can you just recap what you told the students today in convocation? I found it particularly interesting.
Yeah, I'm really passionate about this generation. They get a lot of criticism, and they're the largest demographic of any generation in our lifetime. And I compare them a lot to those of us. I was born in the 50s and grew up in my teenage years in the 60s. And so what I was doing today, I was giving them a contrast of the labels and criticisms put up on us who lived in the 60s. We were called anti-establishment. We were accused of being anti-war. We were anti-anything. If you just put anti and put another word behind it, and that was the generation of the 60s. They called us hippies. They put all kinds of labels on us. And at the end of the day said, you know, this generation will not amount to a thing. Frank Zappa, the musician and composer, I think a philosopher, he said, hey, if you remember the 60s, you probably weren't really there. You know, that's how people looked at those of us who came through the 60s. Likewise, the millennial generation today, I think they have a lot of labels on themselves. They're called narcissists. They're called lazy. They're called self-serving. They had all of these labels that are put upon them. And so my challenge to the students today was, are you going to be confined Are you going to be limited by the labels that, people have put upon you or even the culture has placed upon you? Because with those in the 60s, they called us anti-establishment and they called us radicals and all these things. But then one day, they called us the baby boomers, the most generous generation that's ever come along. Those of us born between 1946 and 1964. I think that's the age range for baby boomers. But those baby boomers who were entrusted with the greatest wealth transfer in history and became the most generous group of generous demographic that we've ever seen. But before that, we were called the radical generation. So my challenge to the students today was, are you going to be limited by the labels that people put on you, whether they call you a millennial, next generation, whatever they want to call you? It's not about the labels. Are you going to wake up one day like we woke up one day and say, hey, we can be the greatest generation of them all. We can be the most generous generation of them all. That maybe today, in a room like we were in today, might be the day when those students would make that pivot and say, I'm going to do something bigger than myself, and this generation will be remembered forever for the way we redefined generosity to great causes. And that was the challenge I gave them today.
You're listening to Tim Smith, and his website is timothylsmith.com. Lots of resources there. Be sure to check it out. You had a student after the convocation today that came up to you. And relate, would you, just synoptically what he said?
Well, he's a young man, a tall kid. It looked like he's probably on your basketball team or something, very athletic. And he just came, and he just very moved. He said, you know, this is the thing that I needed to hear today, because I know that I'm supposed to do something bigger than what I'm doing today. And you really encouraged me today to go for it and to try to find that thing that, as you said, Tim, is bigger than myself. And I just wanted to introduce myself and tell you I'm going to go for it. It was very, very touching, very moving.
Couple things I want to touch on just before we finish up. One is, you know, the Museum of the Bible in D.C. is extremely unique. Four floors, a digital kaleidoscope. I mean, can you just give us it's been called one of the 10 most unusual museums to open, I think, this year, maybe this decade. What's in it? Why is it so unique?
Right. So we're presenting the Bible in three ways. We're presenting the history of the Bible. It's a floor that's very rich in artifacts and proof of the history of this great book. We have another floor that it goes into the narratives or the stories of the Bible. So we'll be telling the stories that really haven't been told in a lot of families and a lot of churches even. People are very lacking in understanding the basic stories of the Bible. So we're going to unpack those, the story of creation, the story of the flood, the stories of Abraham, the stories of Jesus, the disciples, all those stories that are written about in the Bible. And then we're going to talk about on another floor the impact of the Bible, how the Bible's impacted our language day to day. We can hardly have a conversation that we don't say things like a reference to the Good Samaritan. One of my favorite lines is, well, that's just a drop in a bucket. And I used to say that all the time before I realized it was in the Bible. And we're going to talk about how the Bible's impacted our language, our schools, our hospitals, has impacted the workplace, crime and punishment, all of those things. But we're going to do it with the most cutting-edge technology and theatric presentation that you've ever seen. We have an exhibit called the Washington Revelation, and it's actually its technical name is a flyboard theater, but you actually lean into this thing. I think Universal Studios will release this right before we do, but nobody's used this before, where you lean into it and it's the truest sensation of flying that you'll ever get. And we're going to fly people all over Washington, D.C. and show them every monument, every building where there's a scriptural, biblical, or reference that just demonstrates, you know, what that city was founded on. And then when they leave, we're going to give them an app or maybe just a map and say, here, go find them for yourselves. And we're going to use our technology to try to pull people into the story of the Bible so they can experience it firsthand. Now, we're not going to try to persuade them what's true and what's not true. We just think the Bible will do its work in people's lives. And so we want to create an environment, though, where they can engage with the book and they'll walk away and make up their own minds. And so the technology is off the chart. I mean, just when they come in, they'll be handed a digital docent, which is basically a guide through the museum that it'll have an indoor GPS system. It'll locate you within a couple of inches of where you're standing, and it'll nudge you if you stay too long so that you can finish your tour. It's got some crazy technology to it. And so we say it a lot, this is not your grandparents' museum. You know, this is a technology-rich, a theatrically strong, but very historically accurate picture and experience and encounter that you can have with this great book. At the end of the day, we want people to walk out of there and bring the Bible back into their daily conversation, to make it part of their relevant conversation. And that's the outcome that we hope, that people will just walk away saying, man, have you ever thought about what the Bible said about fill in the blank, you know? And that's the impact we hope that it'll become part of the daily dialogue.
That's awesome. And 1 million names, every American has the opportunity to go to museumofthebible.org and make a donation and have their name inscribed on the wall of the museum in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. So this is a crazy idea, but it's coming now. It's really taking traction now. But most museums, you've got to give tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars to get your name commemorated on a wall. We believe so strongly that this place belongs to the kingdom out there, the people of the world, that we felt it inappropriate to make it just for the wealthy or just the people who could write large gifts. So we did a campaign that any gift, any level, we don't care if it's a dollar that you give us, we're going to put your name on the wall and basically give you an opportunity to say, hey, I stand with you. I stand with the Bible. This Bible is an important book in my life. And so we've created this amazing piece of art that'll be on our sixth floor, and it'll contain over 1 million names of people who said, I'm a part of this cause.
Unbelievable. I want to encourage everybody to make a gift at museumofthebible.org. I mean, what a phenomenal new addition to the nation's capital. TimothyLSmith.com. You're Chief Development Officer of the Museum of the Bible, and you also have the chance to mentor and help those leaders believe for the resources. Can you say a word about that in your website?
Yeah, so my website, as you said, TimothyLSmith.com. There you'll find some of the articles and things that I've written. You can buy my book, Donors Are People Too. We have a couple of free ebook downloads there. And the idea behind that site is just to be a resource to people that are working in the nonprofit industry and a place where they can come and connect with each other and find help. And so we'll be launching some online training tools there where people can come in, and they may not be able to afford to go to a conference, but we're going to provide the tools for them online to kind of take the experience of guys like myself and many others who said, hey, we've dedicated and given our lives to these organizations, to this career space, and let us help you do the same.
HBU certainly expresses its gratitude to Museum of the Bible because we partner with you as a university on your Passages program, where you literally subsidize our students to go to Israel for $500, but it's no $500 trip. Just a bit on that, would you?
Yeah, so we're inviting college kids to come see Israel, both the biblical sites of Israel and the geopolitical sites of Israel. And so we charge them $500, and then we raise the funds from donors to support the rest. And we're starting to see literally thousands of kids that want to be a part of this program.
Well, HBU students went in the summer of 2016. The next trip, Passages with Museum of the Bible, HBU students, is June 2017. You can learn more about that at hbu.edu. Some final thoughts, Tim. As you think about where the world is at and the crisis, the division, everything we read about and hear about every day on the media, do you believe that there are leaders to emerge that can capture these things? I mean, this is something taught, not caught. I mean, wouldn't you agree that the leaders, because I think of my own experience reflecting in the rearview mirror of my life, how many discouraged people could have been turned around if they had been trained? And you're offering, as I understand, training via TimothyLSmith.com in the days ahead to tutor leaders and others in how to resource the dream. Does that give you hope?
Yeah, it really does. You know, I came up, as I said, from, I mean, I've lived 2/3 of my life in nonprofit space. The number one thing I hear everywhere I go, even to today, whether it's a church, it's a nonprofit organization, is I wish somebody would have shown me how to raise money. I wish somebody would have shown me how to fund my church's project. You know, I can preach the messages from the Bible. I can cast a vision for my organization, but no one really showed me how. And, you know, guys like me, we came along and we just slugged it out. You know, yeah. We didn't necessarily have the resources, but we had the passion and the ambition to succeed. And so one of the things that I really feel that God has put in my life and has put on me is to leave some of it behind and to create resources and to create an environment to mentor up not just fundraisers, but this next generation of nonprofit leaders. Because I think the real depth of leadership, those young people, I mean, they don't even know who they are yet, but they're going to be the greatest leaders of all time. And it would be really great if people like me could say, listen, it's not just about the projects that we're working on, but how can we take our knowledge, our experience, our failures, our wins, and leave those behind and raise up that next generation? And I feel an obligation to do that. I really do.
Thank you. You've been listening to Timothy L. Smith, the Chief Development Officer, Museum of the Bible, leading the campaign to raise $1 billion for the November 2017 open of Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. It's going to be a national news event. Every American's going to hear about it. I have an idea with this current president. It's going to get amped from the White House to every church house all over North America. Your fall is going to get very exciting. And we look forward to partnering as a university with Museum of the Bible. Jeremiah Johnston, a professor here at Houston Baptist University, in conjunction with MOTB, Museum of the Bible, is conducting a 50-state, 3-year tour. And Tim, I believe you, along with Jeremiah, are going to be in city after city after city. And obviously, men and women are going to learn about the dynamic HBU that is a base for the Christian Thinker Society. Thank you for coming. Just one final moment of challenge to those that are listening.
Sure. Number one, thanks. It's HBU is a great place, and I've enjoyed being on your campus today. But more than that, I enjoy being in a partnership here with the university, with Christian Thinker Society. I think we're going to do great things together. And I think my encouragement is that probably there's someone listening to us. They might be a pastor or a nonprofit leader, and they just feel like they're backed up against the wall and that they can't find their way out. And I just want to say to them that there is a way out, that the funds are there, the relationships are there. There are people just available to come alongside of them. And don't give up hope. Hang on to that great idea. Keep funding it. Keep charging toward it, and seek the kind of guidance and coaching and mentoring that you need to get out of that place where you're stuck.
Thanks, Tim. Until next time, this is Jerry Johnston.
At HBU, we influence the culture around us by challenging our students to put their beliefs into action every day.